We live with persistent tensions over racial injustice, equal rights, gun violence, vaccines.
And for too long, the church has been complacent and complicit.
It's time for the church to model the way.
Let's explore how St. Luke's can become the church the world needs.
In my hometown, there was this church that had a pretty good reputation, and I had known people who went there in high school and they loved it, and I started listening to their new pastor and found it to be really good. So I was excited, decided to go there, and I just remember pulling into the parking lot, and the flags that were flying didn't scream to me that I was welcomed and seen for who I am.
I grew up in a conservative evangelical environment, and as a gay man growing up in that environment, I can see now, looking back, that it sowed shame inside of me.
I remember very vividly being asked to come into one of the pastor's offices, and I was let go from my volunteer music ministry in the church because I accepted others that they didn't.
So it led me to a place where I didn't really know what my faith was going to look like moving forward. I didn't know if there was a church where I would even feel safe in again, to be completely honest.
So those are St. Luke's members talking about very real experiences they've had in church before, and I'm going to come back to that in a moment. I just want to say that sometimes you can get so caught up in all of the activities of a day, you forget the significance of a moment. That happened to me during our anthem a while ago. One of my favorite anthems, by the way, God is Here. The choir was singing, the orchestra was playing, and it suddenly hit me. It's the first time in 1 month, in 1 year and 7 months, that we have had the full choir and the full orchestra in this room. It's been that long. We've broken the longest drought in our church history, and it is a good feeling. It's a good feeling to see so many of you back today. And we're glad that you're here. We're glad you're here on the beginning of an important series. I want to start with a story about two American soldiers who were a part of the Normandy invasion, and they got separated from their unit. One of the soldiers died, and the other one did not want to leave his buddy, who had become a very close friend, behind. He carried him to a nearby village and went to the church that he found. It happened to be a Catholic church. He located the priest. He said, "Can I bury my friend in the cemetery?" And the priest asked him the question, "Is your friend or was your friend Catholic?" The man said, "Well, no, actually, I know that he was not." The priest said, "I'm so sorry. Only Catholics can be buried in the cemetery, but you can go just outside the fence and you can bury your friend there." So he did. He placed what he felt would be a great permanent marker to mark the grave so that if that friend's family ever came back, they could find it. Well, many years later, the soldier himself returned to France. He went to the village and he wanted to find the grave of his friend, and he walked around the border of the cemetery, the same fence that had been there years ago, but no grave, and he couldn't understand it. He went and found the priest of the church at the time. The priest who gave him permission to bury his friend had been long since deceased himself. He said, "Listen, I buried my friend here back during the war. I can't find the grave. Can you help me?" The priest said, "Well, let me check some records." A few minutes later, he came back and says, I think I know what happened. Come with me." They went through the cemetery inside the fence and found the grave of his friend with the marker that he had put in place. The man said, "How could this be? I know I buried my friend outside the fence." The priest said, "Well, without any explanation in the record, the priest at that time, many years ago, decided to enlarge the cemetery, and he moved the fence." He couldn't do anything about the rules that said who can be buried there, but there was no rule against moving the fence. That story reminds me of that line in Edwin Markham's great poem, Outwitted. He drew a circle that shut me out, heretic rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win, and we drew a circle that took him in. We begin today a series called The Church the World Needs. And no doubt the world needs a church that draws people in and helps people experience the acceptance of God, but that is not the church many people do experience, as we heard in our video. In their book, Why Nobody Comes to Church Anymore, the authors cite research that names the top four reasons people give for not coming to church. The first reason is, I feel judged. I feel judged. 87% of Americans label Christians as judgmental. And in the book Unchristian, they cite research that claims 91% of Americans say that Christians are anti-homosexual. Now, if St. Luke's is going to be an open and welcoming church, we have a lot to overcome, don't we, in terms of public perception. The next reason, I don't want to be lectured. Some of you probably feel that way, I'm sure. Number three, church people are hypocrites. Number four, your God is irrelevant to my life, but I'd like to know there is a God and he cares for me. Now, that last one has some hopefulness to it, because the research also points out the vast majority of Americans believe in God and say that their faith is important to them. They just don't believe in church. Steve Hewitt says, all of the reasons behind why the church is dying in America is centered on the fact that we have lost our ability to love others. So how does the church reclaim its call to give hope to a world that sees the church as irrelevant and even opposed to their values and their needs? Well, as the old saying goes, when all else fails, go back to the beginning. So that's what I want to do with this for a few moments this morning. I want to go back to the beginning of the church, back to a momentous decision that is recorded in the book of Acts, chapter 15. Let me set the stage. The apostles, following the death and resurrection of Jesus, have remained in Jerusalem to serve as a de facto governing board for the sprawling, spreading Christian movement. Now, up to this point, Christians identified themselves primarily as Jewish. They believed in Jesus, but they were Jewish by identity, which meant that they followed all the Jewish laws until something happened north of Jerusalem in the city of Antioch. There was a Christian community there meeting, and they began welcoming non-Jewish people into their fellowship, Gentiles, which in some Jewish communities was a great offense, and in some others, it was punishable by death. So Jewish people in the community began to speak to the Gentiles and say, now wait, you cannot be a part of this unless you're circumcised. As you might imagine, for many Gentiles, that was a deal breaker. They said, why should we have to change who God made us to be just to fit into the church? So the question was taken to Jerusalem, to the apostles. Paul and Barnabas were the co-pastors of the Antioch community, and they gave witness before the council of the apostles. It was the first conference, if you will, of the young church. They said, the Holy Spirit is as evident on the lives of the Gentiles as the Jews. These people belong as much as anybody else. After hearing all the evidence, the brother of Jesus, James, who was acting as the chair of the group, rendered a decision. We will no longer require Gentiles to be circumcised to come into the church. However, we ask that they follow the sexual purity laws and not to eat foods that have been devoted to idols and to other gods. In other words, we still have standards in the community. Grace is not going to devolve into an anything goes philosophy. But we are going to change one significant rule, a rule that went all the way back to Abraham, that said you must be circumcised. That's what it means to be a part of the community. How did the church reach this decision? Maybe a better question for us is, what does it mean for us today? Well, one thing to notice is that the reason they were able to make this decision the way they did is they were not yet a church. And that's a great thing. They had not yet organized themselves as a separate religious body. They didn't have rules and regulations and constitutional principles. They were able to make a decision based on what they believed to be true to the Spirit of Jesus. Now, nothing wrong with rules. Rules help us learn how to play well together. They keep us out of trouble. But rules can become an obstacle of grace, and the longer an organization is in existence, the more rules it tends to add. When the Methodist Church started in America, it was at a conference in Baltimore in 1784. The minutes of that meeting were printed, and that became the first book of discipline, our rule book in the United Methodist Church. It had 35 pages. Some 230 years later, our book of discipline has 900 pages. The longer an organization is in existence, the more rules they add. Now, again, nothing wrong with rules, but the trouble in the church is that the rules have a way of becoming the religion. Listen to a quote from C.S. Lewis. He said, "There exists in every church something that sooner or later works against the very purpose for which it came into existence. So we must strive very hard by the grace of God to keep the church focused on the mission that Christ originally gave it." This is what the disciples, the apostles, were free to do. They were free to make a decision based on the Spirit of Christ. They didn't have a book of discipline to consult, but that doesn't mean they were undisciplined. They didn't have guidelines, but that doesn't mean they didn't have guidance. Their authority was the life of Jesus, and this the church must reclaim today. The decisions facing the church are complex and they're tough. We face decisions today about racial equality. We face decisions in the United Methodist Church over human sexuality and whether or not we're going to give full rights to other people. We face many difficult decisions, but the problems we face are not too big for Jesus. They just require the people who follow him to turn to him and fall at his feet and say, "Lord, your will be done." Susan and I just returned from a wedding of our oldest daughter in Colorado. And we had a lot of the family together, and I got to spend one afternoon with her brother Paul, who's a pastor in Topeka. And we were just talking about the last year and a half and what that's been like, and all of the tough decisions and how hard it is to preach to these things. Paul said, "I had a guy in the church come to me one day. He says, 'I got a bone to pick with you. Your preaching is getting off target. You are pushing politics and pandering to the liberal media.'" Paul said, whoa, now wait a minute. I'm not pushing politics, I'm pushing Jesus. And if you can show me how I am not representing the cause of Christ in any way, please let me know. I want to know that, because that's what concerns me. The apostles were able to make a momentous decision to open up the church to all people and no longer be an exclusive body, because they could simply look to the example of Jesus. And so we believe this is what he would do. Now, something else that you notice in this story is that the apostles practice what I call reverse assimilation. Reverse assimilation. What do I mean by that? When I started out in ministry, assimilation was a big buzzword. We were taught that churches who were healthy and growing had great assimilation processes for new people. People coming into the church had a way to get assimilated into the life of that congregation, to learn its values, its behaviors, and just simply what do you do if you're on the inside of this church, which meant people on the outside had to become like people on the inside. Now, in Jesus' day, assimilation meant circumcision. Now, I know that was just the men. It didn't involve the women, but the women didn't have rights. Assimilation, acceptance was determined by men. I'm not saying it was a good thing. You can make up your own mind about that. But that was how one came into the church. Think about this. What was going on when the church said, we're not going to require that anymore? It said, we are going to change who we are to reach you where you are. Reverse assimilation. The health and the future of the church is going to require this. The more the world changes around us, and the latest census data has shown us it is, the more the world around us changes, the more the church must change. To say, how can we change who we are and what we do and what we offer to reach you where you are? You know, St. Luke's has had in its mission statement for a long time, we're an open community. In recent years, we have felt the need to articulate what we mean by openness, who all is included. And some people say, why do we need to do that? Why do we need to start naming that we're open to LGBTQ people? Why do we need to start naming that we're open to people of color? Why can't openness mean openness? And here's the reason why. Because the church in its history has named the people it's not open to. Our book of discipline, in its history, once said women do not have the same rights as men, and they don't have the same opportunities. It's only been since 1952 that women have been ordained to be pastors. In its history, the Book of Discipline has named people of color and that they don't have the same rights. Even today, right now, our Book of Discipline still reads, the practice of homosexuality is incompatible with Christian teaching. Therefore, self-avowed practicing homosexuals are not to be certified as candidates, ordained as ministers, or appointed to serve in the United Methodist Church. Why do we name? Because we need to let people know they're welcomed and they have a place, and we must continue to do this. One more thought about this passage is that the decision made by the apostles meant that when the church chooses to welcome all, it gives all of us a mission. It gives all of us a mission. Once the decision was made, notice how it says, then the apostles and elders, together with the whole church in Jerusalem, chose delegates, and they sent them to Antioch of Syria and Paul and Barnabas to report on this decision. And when the decision was reported, it says the church broke out in jubilation. The church the world needs is one that goes to great lengths to name who it welcomes and to let people know they have a part. God desires them to be a part of God's family and to have the same experience of God's transforming love as any other person. We're called to do this. We're called to be those letters of announcement and welcome any way we can. With every person we get to know and find the opportunity to bring up in a conversation, do you happen to have a community of faith for your spiritual nurture? I had come try ours sometime. Try the place I'm a part of. To be announcing and letting people know, because when the church does this, when people experience it, it gives people a reason to celebrate. Only until you know the hurt of being told you don't fit and you are not as loved by God as some other people, do you understand the joy that happens to you when a community says, no, we don't believe that. We believe God loves you equally the same right here. So listen to some of those voices we heard a moment ago share about some of their wounds in church and what they found here.
It was about 3 years ago. I said to my husband, we're going to St. Luke's and I'm going to find God. And if I can't find the truth here, then I have to be done.
I was kind of job hunting at the time and found an open position here in the youth department and also at the front desk. And the more I looked into St. Luke's, the more I realized, wait, maybe this is the kind of church that I've been hoping that I would find.
It's been a place for me to begin to heal, to reframe what I believe theologically. I do have kids and they come here as well, and I feel good that they're coming to church in an environment where they are taught to be inclusive of all people and that God's love and His plan is for everyone.
St. Luke's is the model church for what we should be. It is a true sanctuary. It is a place where everyone is welcome, period. No if, no but, period.